bellies and stay with us here. It's Baffin Spears Broadsides coming at you. January 14th, 2001, a Santa Cruz Odyssey. The favorite tune of all the Free Radio Santa Cruz broadcasters. And here we have the dean of all the broadcasters, or the bad boy with all the facts, the V-Man, who's actually been kind of hosting the last show, although I guess it's been mostly sort of a series of musical interludes and news updates that have already been pre-recorded. But V-Man is anything but pre-recorded. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. I'm your ever-present Sunday noon host, Bathrop's Pierre Robert Norris. We go till 1:30, cover homeless issues, civil rights in Santa Cruz, that sort of stuff. And we may even change our theme song. The V-Man here is trying to persuade us to kind of get up to date, get with it. You know, I mean, move into the mainstream, or at least into the main side stream or something. Welcome, V-Man.
Well, good morning, and I have to say that that song is just it's just a bit too much for me at 11 a.m., and I haven't had enough coffee, and like...
It sucks the big weenie, is what you're saying.
You know, I'm like the person that everybody from Free Radio comes and complains to about stuff, and like I've received about a dozen complaints on your opening theme, Robert, and we're gonna have to talk about this at our next meeting.
The censorship committee will be meeting at Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Just kidding.
Actually, I would like people to give a call to 423 Huff if you really are barfing at the theme song, or if you have a suggestion for a better theme song for Bathrop Spears Broadsides. Again,
what about that 15 band you were talking about? Those crazy punk rockers from Berkeley.
That 15, which has Who Owns the Land, of course.
Song, yes. We just heard Landlord, actually, a song about homelessness and rent
right
and stuff. And it's kind of, you know, something more on topic of your show.
Yeah, with perhaps a more contemporary beat.
Yes.
I think Billy Joel is like 10 years old.
That album is like, I remember being in like 8th grade and being late for the bus and having my mom have to drive me to school and listening to that on Top 40 radio.
It brings back those poignant memories, doesn't it?
Yes.
And we have an example of the broken home from which V-Man came. You can see here how Free Radio actually is merely simply a kind of a pathetic, anguished cry for a better family life. Would you agree with that?
Sometimes, yeah. Some of the programs.
Such honesty you're going to find only on Free Radio Santa Cruz. And Free Radio Santa Cruz will take your honesty, too, and put it out there for other people to tear apart, comment on, or perhaps benefit from. Call-in number for Free Radio is 427-3772. That'll put you directly on the air with myself and Vinny. Vinny does need his coffee, so I don't want to hold him too long. He's going to have to go out and get his coffee before he falls asleep here. So, Vinny, you agreed generously to stay with us because you are really, as I repeatedly say, and I think it's true, the man on keeping up with Free Radio nationwide. Would you say that you're fairly well informed on what's going on there?
I would say that's a fair statement, yes.
And
I wouldn't say I was the man, but I'm fairly well informed. Yes.
Certainly not the man in another sense, but I would say the one to come to in the Santa Cruz area, unless you want to, of course, talk to...
Not the only one.
Who else would you recommend? Anybody else?
There's a lot of people here actually keep up with stuff. There's Ted Koopman, He's not really a pirate, but he, you know, he was on your TV show with Becky. Voices. What is your show called?
Club Cruise, actually. Yeah.
Him and I appeared on a show together. He did a college thesis on us and has been involved with the rulemaking and stuff and the LPFM stuff and has kind of followed the movements.
Is he as accessible as you? I mean, can he just be called?
No, no, that's true. I mean, I'm here. I'm, you know, living the life, and in fact, he's writing and talking about it. But you know.
So if you have questions about Free Radio,
there's others too. I mean, at Free Radio Santa Cruz, there's Skidmark Bob and Phil and Eon, and there's other people that keep up to stuff. I mean, probably not as thoroughly as I have.
Certainly,
not I've as made thoroughly. It. I've made it kind of my focal point. But
now, I know that you are a man who's got the details down with such. I don't want to say precision because I haven't really reviewed the material that you're looking at, but it sounds like you go into it in terms of the specifics, and you have thought about the material that you bring on the air. Your show, of course, is happening every...
Numerous shows.
You here. Have numerous shows, but numerous your shows. But your main commentary show is Rockin' the Boat,
Rockin' the
o'clock.
Boat, this is the longest running show I've been doing now for 3.5 years. 9 on Wednesdays.
In the evening.
Yeah. And that's one of the things on that show I do at the beginning is, of course, news out of the world of micro radio, and have been following this stuff for, you know, on the air for about 2.5 years now, almost 3 years. And so what was your question?
Well, you're covering it. I mean, I guess you... I did hear your last analysis of the sort of... There was a sort of debate for the last year and a half about the proposed rules of change by the FCC that were essentially... further, that weren't so good to begin with, but they were further screwed over by folks in Congress, and I guess they've kind of been laid to rest. Although, again, you did a show on this whole business
right.
in detail, and you were quite opinionated, I might add. And,
absolutely.
And had a lot of strong feelings to some very specific issues that arose there. Free radio, as some of you may or may not know, is very kind of low-power radio, which... were there, let's say, bands open? I learned about this by reading from Richard Edmondson's great book. He's our San Francisco
Liberator. Class War, what is it called? Class
it's
War?
It's called, God, you know.
From the Streets to the Airwaves or something?
It's got, you know, the name escapes me. I'm hoping that my producer might have that book, take a look at it and maybe give a call and give us the proper name. I was going to bring it along with us and ask you some questions, but I'm going to have to kind of free form it here. And I'm going to be doing a review of that book for the newspaper Street Spirit, the homeless paper that's sold on the streets every month for a buck. Go buy a copy immediately. Good stories in this issue. Downtown on Pacific Avenue, you can find folks selling it. But, yeah, Richard Edmondson pointed out that there are bands that could be made available that would allow massive micropower radio expansion without interference, which, of course, is the complaint, let's say, of... FM radios, vanilla FM radio, national public radio?
Yeah, NPR, yeah. National Petroleum Radio.
National, yes, well put. Incoming call here. Hi there, you're on Free Radio.
And the title of Richard Edmondson's book is called Rising Up, Class Warfare in America from the Streets to the Airwaves.
Ever on the job. Thank you very much.
Sure.
And indeed, his book, it's... it covers what interests me in his book, and I'm going to be talking about this at length in a future show, is it covers how his involvement as a homeless person who lived in a vehicle with San Francisco Food Not Bombs to the realization that because the media was so distorting the homeless struggle in San Francisco and the police counterattack against a rather basic attempt to publicize poverty and provide food to people, which Keith McHenry and Food Not Bombs was doing in front of San Francisco City Hall, because so much false information was getting out, first Richard Edmondson and others began to try to make tapes for KPFA, the Pacifica station, and WBAI and other scattered FM stations throughout the country that were willing to air Food Not Bombs Radio, or I believe I don't quite have the name.
Food Not Bombs Radio Network, right.
That's it.
He did manage to get that out on Radio for Peace International and Shortwave Band and also on other micro radio stations like Free Radio Santa Cruz. We were airing that when he was producing it. It was a bi-monthly show. And anyway, yeah, it's a good show. I'm sorry he discontinued it, actually. It was a very in-depth program.
Right. He actually began before there was widespread micropower radio, before Stephen Dunifer of Berkeley began turning out do-it-yourself transmitter kits, and before San Francisco Liberation Radio and Free Radio Berkeley began their initial broadcasts. And he writes about all this in this wonderful book whose title I've already forgotten, but you heard about it a moment ago.
Rising Up.
Thank you.
Class Warfare in America.
Hey, man.
From the streets to the airwaves.
Excellent. Wow. And it's a good book. I'm going to try to make sure it gets to the library. I'm going to try to make sure that the Free Radio Collective gets a copy, both because I think we need – it was written in 1999 and just published recently, but the last year and a half has had – stuff that needs updates
needs
in a way
to be filled in.
That's
yeah.
what I'm kind of. I'm hoping that we can have you, Vinny. I'm going to try to use you as a source in the kind of weeks ahead when I have the information more at my fingertips to ask you the questions. But just having you here in the studio now, what's been happening with the free radio movement for the last year? For those who haven't really been following it, can you give us a kind of a quick update?
A quick update would actually, briefly, we'd actually have to go back 2 years to January of 1999 when the low-power FM notice of proposed rulemaking was issued by the FCC due to numerous thousands of stations challenging their authority by taking to the airwaves as we are right now without a license.
Now, is thousands accurate or is it hundreds?
Thousands is accurate, yes. There have been thousands and probably thousands and thousands of micro radio stations, like at least over the last decade, you know, the last 8 to 10 years. There have been literally thousands of radio stations on the air across America.
We're talking U.S. here.
Mm-hmm. And, not just a national movement here, but it is a worldwide phenomenon. I mean, pirate radio is nothing new. Pirate radio has been happening since the inception of radio, basically, since the 30s. But what happened in 1978, really, is the FCC did away with their Class D FM, which was licensed stations under 10 watts. And for 20 years, they refused to look at this issue. And Mabana Kantako went on the air and challenged this in the late 80s, and that was the beginning, and Stephen Dunifer and Richard Edmondson and others came along in the early 90s and started making this readily available, cheap to manufacture equipment and supplying people all over the world with transmitters and such. And so this act, you know, kind of helped it grow, and others came out, like L.D. Brewer, who also was out of Florida building transmitters, and others. There's Ramsey Electronics, a whole bunch of people that make equipment now to get it into people's hands and come on the air. And so the FCC, faced with these thousands of people hungry for access to the media, access to their communities via these low power transmitters, were forced, really, essentially, to re-examine the issue of low power radio. And so in 99, like I said, they issued a notice of proposed rulemaking, which said someday we're going to issue a rulemaking on this, and they had three proposals in front of them for rulemaking, and they finally mixed and matched and settled on, in January 2000, a proposal to create a new low-power FM radio service, which consisted of two classes, 1 to 10 watts and 50 to 100 watts for local communities. Part of this rulemaking said that they would weaken the third adjacent channel protection standards. And I heard a very good analogy the other day. Just imagine the FM dial is like a parking lot, and you as a low power FM operator would be a little motor scooter, and then you have these multinational 18-wheeler trucks that are going nationwide, parking here too. And so you have a parking space at 94.1 FM, and that's where this big rig is. So they're saying they want the next three parking spaces to be protected for them so that there's no chance of cutting in or bumping into their little big rig. And you have this little scooter, and you want to put it on the third one, and you can't. You're not allowed to now.
Now, we're talking about parking spaces as big as the big rig itself? Or?
Yes. Basically.
I see. So a parking space that might, shall we say, facilitate 10 or 15 little scooters each.
Well, if they were spread out far enough, yeah. Mm-hmm. I guess that's not the best analogy, but the FM dial basically is sliced up in such a way as to protect these huge radio stations that are broadcasting satellite feeds of hate speech like Howard Stern, Dr. Lara, etc. So anyhow, and NPR, of course, that's NPR is, when going back to 1978, they're the people that called for the dissolution of the Class D FM band and or the FM service. And anyhow, so in 2000...
Was there much free radio in 1978 in the sense of, not free radio, licensed kind of lower power stations at that time? Was it a large phenomenon then?
I would say it was pretty, you know, I mean, it was pretty popular there. You know, high schools and colleges and small community radio stations were definitely operating. And what happened was after their license ran out, they renewed most of the licenses in 1978. And so some of the licenses started running out over time. And then NPR would swallow that license up and use it to put repeaters and beam their programming nationwide that way. And they took the lower portion of the band where you have... like typically college and NPR affiliates.
So diversity was replaced by the vanilla kind of corporate grousings of NPR, which essentially has become more and more commercial over the years.
Oh, absolutely. They do. I mean, they've always taken underwriting, but now it's just really almost like blatant commercials. But anyhow, so in 2000, the FCC, you know, authorized this new service. And what they did with that was, like I said, weaken the third adjacent channel protection standard. And so they said that on the third one, you can put a micro radio station here, provided that you have not broadcast without a license prior to February 99. You have shut down within any 24-hour notice of an FCC visit, and provided that you have been a community organization, educational organization, or church that has been in existence for more than 2 years, and provided that you're willing to give the name of your station something like KZLP or something, call letters, provided that you will give station IDs every hour, provided that you will not swear on the radio, all these things. And then also on top of that, you have to file these like really complicated forms to get the license and construction permits. By the time they issued any licenses, it won't even be until 2003 before one of these things probably gets on the air legally. And by then, I mean, a new Congress coming in, it's probably going to get gutted even further than it has. But what happened is much wrangling over the year 2000. The FCC's plan was gutted by two acts, by an act of Senate and an act of Congress called the Radio Preservation Act. And what it did was it weakened the third adjacent channel protection standard. It said the FCC can't do that, that they have to leave that in place, and so now they've added it on as a rider in the month of November. Bill Clinton signs the budget bill in December with this rider attached to it that kills this plan. And so it didn't actually kill it, though, because the FCC is still moving forward. They're still accepting applications for licenses coming up this week, actually, January 16th through the 22nd. There's like a lottery of 12 states that are going to be able to apply in the next wave of applications. It's like the third or fourth wave of application filing windows.
Is California's wave gone?
California's wave came and went. It was the first wave back in June.
And has anybody been acted on in California? Do we know if anybody has gotten a license?
53 stations have been approved for potential LPFM stations because their applications were for a channel that was a fourth adjacent channel, which is what the Congress bill will allow for.
Explain briefly what that is.
Well, the fourth adjacent is that there's an empty frequency on the fourth channel. So like I said, 94.1 was the example. Go to 94.3, 94.5, and 94.7 are all protected, but 94.9 is open. And then on the other side of that, you'd have three more over, it would be up to, what, 95.7 would be the next big radio station. Then on 94.9, you could put a low-power FM.
That would be the fourth adjacent.
Right. So essentially, it's in the most rural parts of the country where these new stations are going to be allowed to come on the air.
And in California as well, you think?
Well, out of those 53 that were accepted, that was out of about 380 that were filed throughout the state. And most of those were rejected for numerous reasons. They were either...
So less than a sixth got into the...
Right, just out of California.
And those haven't been granted licenses. They've been...
And those 53 are just the ones that there's an open frequency. Now they have to examine the applications further. That's the next step. And determine if any of these are for the same channel. There could be two applications in the same community for the same channel. And then they're going to have to, like, find out. And that's what the case is. And out of these 53... I believe 29 or 30 are from religious organizations.
Now, didn't this whole issue of the FCC's power over the radio waves, which are supposed to be the public domain, and I guess the FCC on rare occasions, like in 1960 under Minow, and maybe you might stretch it to say in 1998 or 99 under this new guy,
under Kennard,
they tried to make some effort to take some action against the corporate megaliths that are, you know, that I guess stole most of the airwaves in 96 with the
Telecommunications Act, yeah.
Which essentially, you know, they wrapped it up for the next 10 years, and what, they sextupled their profits, and multiplied them by a factor of six.
Yeah, something like
in
that.
In essence, by the change to digital programming.
Right, that's what they did. They gave away $70 billion worth of digital spectrum to large corporate broadcasters with that Telecommunications Act that you referred to. And at the same time as they're trying to do this, however, Robert, we just witnessed this week the FCC approved merger of Time Warner and AOL, creating the single largest corporate media outlet in the world that will own more than 50% of the media now in the United States in one company.
Amazing. And we've seen how there was concern in the 80s that there were 50 companies controlling the market, then concern that dropped to 25 in the 90s. Now you say one controls more than 50%?
One controls more than 50%. About six, I believe, now in the U.S. control like 70-80% of the all the media outlets. And then there's like small independent publications.
Well, attorney Luke Hyken, who was, of course, helping Stephen Dunifer, who for 4 years, with the aid of an unusually constitutionally sensitive federal court judge, Claudia Wilken, until she took a dive in 1998, essentially said to the FCC for the first time in its history and to the corporate media and the National Association of Broadcasters, you can't simply cut low frequency radio off the air without considering the First Amendment implications.
Right.
In other words, you say we don't grant you a license and therefore that's that. No, you have to have some provision for a license. And of course, then they came back with their kind of contradictory claims about, oh well, they wasn't adequate application.
You didn't apply for a waiver. Had you applied for a waiver, you'd still have the First Amendment argument. But since you didn't go by the rules, we're not going to hear your arguments of First Amendment issues.
Right. Now that's
essentially what she said.
Wilken eventually used that probably because, and again, would you say it was because of political pressure that she did that? Is there any evidence of that?
You know, it's hard to say.
I mean, she was out on a limb for 4 years. Why would she suddenly come in from that limb?
It's possible that there was some amount of pressure on her, but it's also, you got to remember, she's a federal judge. She's working within the system, and so she's trying to be fair and go by the book and all this, and like she found some probably weird little statute somewhere in some book finally, and that's really what I think. I mean, a lot of these people that are in positions of power, honestly, you know, we hear about a lot of on the radio about how people, you know, they're against us and they're our enemy. A lot of people are really just they're in there and they think they're going to make change and they believe in the value system and all this, but they're going to use the system to make change. They really believe that. That's my personal philosophy.
Right. I think you're right. I think it's true in Santa Cruz, too, at a local level as well.
Absolutely. I think it's just that way in all levels of government. There are some people that are genuinely corrupt and out to, you know, screw people and get as much as they can. And that's a lot of people. But, I mean, there are some people in the system that are, like, judges and police even and whatever, that are really, they think they're doing the right thing.
Right.
And they think they're helping people, and they just want to, like, they believe in the system and the values of capitalism and this so-called democracy,
blah,
blah,
blah.
They
somehow feel there is real choice here.
Right.
And in fact, as we see, the choices get smaller and smaller and are only for those with more and more money. Luke Hyken, the attorney for Stephen Dunifer, sort of turned the question around when they said, why didn't you get a waiver? You know, why didn't you follow the rules? Turned to the FCC and said, what gives you the right to make a whole series of rules like this just out of the blue? On what basis are you making these rules? There's a First Amendment that should be regulating this whole system. And indeed, I guess the original question was, what gives the FCC the basis for moving in as early as 1927 and then 1934 with early legislative acts? And the claim was that there was confusion and anarchy, as they like to say.
Yeah, that's
using
exactly
the word
what
anarchy,
it is.
You know, I mean, on the airwaves.
That's what they said.
But do we know anything about that? Have you done any research in terms of early history, Vinny? Do you know, was there in fact a lot of problems, or was this a move by corporations, even at that early stage of the game, to get a much larger share of the radio spectrum than they were entitled to through the FCC, which I guess, was originally the Federal Radio Commission.
Right, the FRC in 1927 was created. I have read a little bit of that history. I haven't read extensively into it. I'd love to read more. I don't ever really have much time to read, though. But I've read a little bit of that, like, a few years ago. And based on some of the readings that I've read, yeah, you probably hit the nail on the head when you said it was a move by corporate broadcasters, and specifically NBC and RCA they used to be called?
I think so.
Yeah, RCA. Yeah, that's true, but there were definitely people on the airwaves. I mean, this new radio thing, people were able to get on the air, and there were probably some small amount of problems of interference and whatnot, but I don't think it was.
There was massive educational stations, yeah, and local stations that were all over the airwaves without. And again, I as far as I know from what I've read, there the claims were that there was interference, but I haven't seen stats as to whether there was actually this was really the problem, or that what they wanted to do was to essentially gobble up the stations and yeah, say and grant, you know, licenses to those who had the power to pursue them in court, which is eventually what happened. At least this is what I gained some of this from Richard Edmondson's book called,
what was it? Rising Up.
Rising Up.
Class Warfare from the Street in America, from the Streets to the Airwaves.
Now, here in
it's
Santa...
It's a long title.
It's a long title and an interesting book of a good length. A lot of stuff about the homeless in San Francisco and how his struggles with them and the courts around Food Keith McHenry and Food Not Bombs. McHenry was one of the leaders of Food Not Bombs and the chief police target for a long time up there. How they led to his opening up his own radio station, originally by driving his car up to the hills. And
he was actually chased by the FCC, wasn't he?
He described that.
It's an interesting story.
That whole story, how the FCC chased him, and he was held down by the police, and
then the cops were like, "What? You're the what? The Federal Communications Commission? What are we doing here?" You know, kind
right
of thing.
And they let him go, and they let him keep his transmitter. He was very surprised about that whole thing. That was back in 1993, I think. But again, coming up to the present, Free Radio Santa Cruz decided not to apply for a license.
Right.
Again, summarize briefly why Free Radio Santa Cruz made that decision.
Well, we made that decision because we never really came on the air to seek a license. I don't think that was the initial intent of people that started the station. But beyond that, we weren't even eligible for a license because we had refused to shut down, because we had been a thorn in the side, essentially, and we are saying, no, we're not going to wait. We're not going to wait around for you to maybe someday grant us a license where you're going to limit our freedoms anyway. We need access now. We need a clear, real voice for the community to discuss issues, and we're not going to kowtow to you. You're an illegitimate authority is what we figure. You have no right to regulate us. We don't have the FCC, even by their own laws, only has the right to enter your station to inspect if you're licensed by it. So essentially they have no rights to come in and enter our station. So we have always thwarted any attempts by them, and therefore we're ineligible. And I think briefly that's why Free Radio Santa Cruz opted out of even seeking a license, because we weren't even really involved in the process of them creating the service. I mean, there were people who kind of so-called, you know, I hate to use this term, but jumped ship in a way and went from being pirates to being advocates for licensing. And, you know, after their stations were harassed and shut down and stuff, they just decided not to come back on the air.
Now, of course, Free Radio has been harassed. We have been approached on numerous occasions by FCC agents.
Every year. I mean, we've been on the air for almost 6 years, and it's like we've been visited almost like clockwork yearly. In fact, today's January 14, 2001, is exactly 1 year ago since our last visit. And, you know, here we are. We still are here. They went away. They haven't come back with their 40-man SWAT teams and personnel and armor-piercing bullets and, you know,
which
and clipboards
did,
and shit.
They did, for instance, in Miami. They did some serious physical assaults on radio stations.
Oh, yeah, in Miami, in Springfield, in Austin. I mean, the most recent this year. See, at the same time as they created this service, they're talking out one side of their mouth, and on the other side of their mouth, they're making deals like Time Warner and AOL, and they're having their troops come in and bus stations left and right this year. I mean, like, it started with the harassment of us, and then over the course of the year 2000, at least a dozen stations were shut down nationally, and most recently, in the past few months, the day before the election, Free Radio Austin, and they're in Austin, Texas, George W. Bush hometown. And
Austin's supposedly liberal town for Texas.
Right, it's like, you know, Santa Cruz sister city or something. Yeah, and what happened there was they had been shut down in October and came back on the air 36 hours or 72 hours later, defiantly returned to the airwaves at a new location after having their station seized, and then 3 weeks later, day before the election, FCC comes, shuts them down again, breaks a window, refuses to show the DJ a warrant, and enters into the studio, shuts them off, and a large crowd gathered by this point, and so their FCC thug, Lloyd Perry, who coincidentally, we're finding out now, is actually the brother of the lieutenant governor of the state of Texas, who's also a man named, I think his name was Bob Perry, and now he is the governor since Bush became president and resigned as governor of Texas. So it's kind of a weird situation going on down there, and our friend Reckless, who was here for many years, went down into Austin and helped become a part of that radio station and helped found that radio station and is now facing federal injunctions and possible jail time if she, you know, she's being sued civilly by the government. They have her and three other people's names in a civil suit, and they're trying to get them to give up the names of all the people that are involved to grant a permanent injunction against every one of these individuals. And it's just a mess what's going on there. And then, of course, Mabana Kintako was shut down twice. Also, as I mentioned earlier, he was pretty much the grandfather of this movement in the 80s.
Indiana or Illinois?
Illinois. Springfield, Illinois. Lincoln's land. And he came on the air. He's a blind African-American man who also, you mentioned briefly about Richard Edmondson's roots to the homeless community, was also a tenants' rights advocate. And the name of the station was actually WTRA for Tenants' Rights Association. And that's what the purpose of the radio was, to organize the people in their community projects, their projects. And that's how they started. And he was forced off the air. A SWAT team raided them in September. Him and his family shut the station down. And he came back on the air with the help of people like us and many others around the nation that heard about his case. Sent him money and equipment and got him back on the air a month later. He was shut down November 30th of 2000.
A second time.
Mm-hmm. And also ordered into court and facing a possible jail time if he comes back on the air again.
How many stations would you estimate at the current time in the United States are on the air as unlicensed stations?
Well, it's really hard because right now more and more people are becoming more bold because of this rider that Clinton signed into law that prevented the FCC to go forward with their LPFM. People are just coming on the air.
Because the
I would estimate there are at least a couple hundred at this point, by my estimates, maybe more.
Is there much connection with these stations in terms of cooperation? I know that there have been at least two or three, maybe annual, micropower conferences. Mm-hmm. Is there one planned coming up?
I haven't heard of anything in the near future, but maybe that could be in the works. I'm actually, unfortunately, the last few days, my internet access has been down, so I've been kind of out of touch with
the
outside world due to the storm. Blew out my computer monitor, but that's another story.
Due to Cruzio's ineptness, what I'm having problems with myself, but hey.
That storm that blew off your last show, actually, the last 15
blew us
minutes.
Out the door. I'd like to apologize right now to those of you who didn't get the last 10 minutes of our Thursday 6 to 8 p.m. show. You know, a lot of the people in free radio have been homeless. A lot of the people in free radio know what it's like to be on the streets, and some of them still make some of their living by actually singing on the streets. I know that Skidmark Bob and Phil Free used to do that, and Phil does still. I haven't heard Bob doing too much singing lately on the streets. And so there is a real essential, not just sympathy, but empathy for what it's like to be out there without money or without regular lodgings, to be just struggling to survive and face a hostile, and it is hostile in Santa Cruz, even though there's a lot of mythology to the contrary, a hostile climate where police officers look you up and down and decide whether they're going to enforce their own laws against you. You know?
Well, in fact, Robert, not only were some of the programmers here and are still currently, current programmers are homeless and have been over time. I mean, I myself have been homeless at a time in Santa Cruz and at a few different times, actually. But also, the radio station itself was homeless for a time there, and we were forced to operate outdoors in a bike cart, and we also faced harassment by the police, but that was many years ago now. We were able, luckily, we had the good fortune to find lodging for the radio station for the last 4 years, actually, and have maintained it.
Now, the city itself has, I guess, on a couple of, at least on one occasion, expressed its support for Free Radio. I guess it's around the time Claudia Wilken decision came down crushing Free Radio Berkeley for a time.
That was in 1999, January 1999.
So it was actually about a year after that.
It was about 2 years ago.
Right.
That was when the FCC was still considering the notice of proposed rulemaking to, you know, make a notice that a year later we're going to create this service, and then a year later Congress is going
to
kill it.
And City Council 6-1 here in Santa Cruz.
5-1.
Michael
Hernandez was absent.
And Cynthia Matthews was opposed.
Nay.
Thank you, Cynthia. Well, it's good to know some people are always consistent on these issues. I mean, Rotkin, who likes to jump up as the great supporter of Mumia and the great supporter of, in this case, free radio and medical marijuana.
In fact, Rotkin didn't even sponsor the bill. He took all the media hype about it, of course, because he's the one that actually changed the resolved part. The resolved part was would have had the council encouraging us to continue to operate unlicensed, but they changed it to urge the FCC to create some new service. So essentially, it's you know, the city council thing, it doesn't mean anything anymore. Mm-hmm. It only meant something for that week that, you know, the FCC was considering changing the law.
And, of course, because Free Radio Santa Cruz would not be permitted, because all its broadcasters have been continuing to say it's more important to get out news, information, good music, community sentiment, and allow a dialogue every day than to wait 2 years to see if maybe it'll be allowed then, all of us are ineligible.
Yeah. And as it turns out, there would have been no eligible frequencies in Santa Cruz either for this service. And the only people that applied in the whole county were out of Watsonville. There were two organizations that applied for a low-power FM, and I don't think either of them... Well, they were mutually exclusive because they were both for the same frequency. And so one of them's going to get shut out if there is a frequency available in Watsonville, which I don't think there is. It was 104.7, I believe, they applied for. But, yeah, so here we are. I mean, unlicensed, and here we have been. I mean, I know there's some other stations that are still coming on the air. I mean, on November 30th, actually, the same day that Mabana Kantaka was shut down, a station came on the air. So it's like two for one kind of a thing. If you shut one down, two more are going to come up somewhere else. And people are becoming more bold. Twin Cities is now operating regular schedule 7 days a week. Free Radio up in Eugene, Oregon, it's called Radio Free Cascadia. They're coming up back on the air. To Madison, Wisconsin, Berkeley, Santa Cruz. I just read about a new one that announced themselves called Radio Free Canton in Ohio, Florida. You know, so it's happening. It's happening all over. More and more people are coming on the air, and that's what we like to see.
Is there a website people can use if they want to keep abreast of information on this?
There's many. There's a couple different ones. There's www.radioforall.com. Dot org
for all FORALL
radio number four, just the four, ALL.org. And then there's www.about.pirateradio.com, and that's a pretty comprehensive up-to-date website as well on the low power and pirate radio movement. It's updated about weekly or so, usually once a week or so, and that's run by a guy named John Anderson in Madison, Wisconsin, and he's, you know, keeps up to what's going on. He has the enforcement action database there, keeping a running tally on actions and that he finds out about
repression in your neighborhood.
Exactly. And he has the pirate radio ear candy of the month every month, or if you have an MP3 file player on your computer, then you can listen to pirate radio ear candy. And sometimes Free Radio Santa Cruz is featured on there because I have a show I do on Fridays that I post to the internet weekly. It's called The Weekly Freak Show. And on that show, we cover some of these issues. And
here it is, 5:30 on Fridays.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's a kind of a half-hour wrap-up of the week's news that we air here on Free Radio. And I get tapes from different shows and interviews and edit it down to some of the most crucial information and post that to the web. And I have... Actually, now I know of at least 5 radio stations, pirate radio, all unlicensed pirate radio stations that are airing it regularly.
And, of course, Free Radio itself goes out, streams on the web, and that's been increased from a listenership of 5 at any one time to...
80.
80. So 80 people can listen to the show at once.
And if you... We have two formats now. We can listen in MP3 streaming audio, or you can listen, if you just have a real audio player, you can listen in real audio. That's at our website, www.microradio.net/FRSC. And actually, there you will find links to the two sites I talked about, as well as many other links to different news and grassroots organizations out there on the web. And that's at our website. Check it out. And just go to our link sections, www.microradio.net/FRSC.
And if you have kind of listened to this and now are getting interested and don't have a pencil, give a call to the Free Radio message line, 427-4523, and leave a message asking to be, you know, that information be passed back to you by phone.
You could just listen to the the outgoing greeting, I think, has all that information.
Wow, there you go.
Yeah.
Vinny, you are very gracious. You were going to be here for 10 minutes. You've been here for 40
almost,
minutes.
Yeah.
And, you know, I know that this is not, you spend a lot of your time doing things like putting together carefully edited tapes, whereas I edit my tapes on the air.
Yeah,
as
we hear
most
you
people
rewinding it.
I try to give you kind of a look right into the studio, the authentic how it is with us programmers.
The amateur hour.
The amateur, yeah, that's sort of the Norris amateur hour here. But Vinny is the opposite of that. He is a professional around this who doesn't get paid a dime. In fact, he's paying all the time.
I
would say.
Professional, really. You know, that show, I try to be really professional because that's like, I want it to, it's, you know, I want people to play it. So, I mean, if it's just some, you know, somebody queuing up tapes for half an hour, then I don't think other stations would be interested. But it's like, it's got to be really tight because it's a half an hour and it's like supposed to be a week's worth of news on the radio. So there's a lot of stuff that we cover, and a lot of times I don't cover it all in that little half an hour. So,
and I know Free Radio once had there was a time a year ago when you actually had a kind of a studio where you could get stuff made. It was in the Rise Zone.
It wasn't put together that well, unfortunately. We don't have the funds for that kind of stuff, really. I mean,
but if anybody out there does, you know, feel that Santa Cruz Free Radio needs, let's say,
a computer with digital editing?
What else?
Oh, man, we could use anything here. I mean, we're using a VCR right now, so, I mean, you if it plays audio and you got it, and it works, you know, we'll probably find some use for it somewhere. Maybe not in our live studio, but somewhere. But, yeah, we're always looking for equipment and transmitters, anything. I mean, you name it, we need it.
And
Stuff is falling apart here, too, and, like...
Not to mention the programmers.
Well, that's... I don't want to get into any, like, person, you know...
Certainly not.
But, like, for listeners out there that have tuned in and enjoy some of the stuff they hear, even the colorful Robert Norse queuing up tapes live, you know,
right here.
It's important. I mean, that's what we're about. It doesn't have to be completely polished all the time because, you know, we're on 24 hours a day and it's a community. It's the community station. So it's like, that's a representation of us. We're not, you know, getting paid. We're not like, you know, it doesn't have to totally always be professional. I mean, some of us like to be, but I mean, there's times when I'm totally unprofessional on my show.
Can you imagine?
I mean, where I'm not going striving for that ultimate perfect sound quality, but there are other times when it's, you know,
who
you want to make
forget
really
that revelation show that we recorded when you announced you were leaving the air and when
you recorded that?
Of course, I have that just in case you ever try to criticize me.
You're gonna blackmail me with that, huh?
We have honesty on Free Radio Santa Cruz, even when it's embarrassing, even when, you know, it leads to a series of questions and soul searching and examination, and in a way, well, not in a way. I think that really is what, you know, is what at the bottom we need to be doing on a number of issues. I mean, we've had the extensive cover-up and smile-good, feel-good approach around city council, for example, for decades. And they cover their ass with spin endlessly. Now, it may be said that people on the left spend too much time, you know, snapping each other, fighting each other, and getting into these dissident battles. And that, of course, you can go to the other extreme. So, but I'm an advocate for Free Radio. I hope you are out there as well.
Call us, 427-3772.
Hey, if you've got any questions
from anybody out there.
The B-Man wants to know if everybody's asleep or just watching the game. That's probably what's happening.
Oh, that's right, the big game, the Raiders, huh? Go Raiders.
It's the
big
game, but remember, you can watch the Raiders, and you can also listen with another ear to this. This is pretty important stuff.
Turn the color commentary down on the game and, like, tune in Free Radio, man.
There you go.
Fuck football.
While we're waiting for your calls, we will turn to a little... a suggested song here, which actually is one of Vinny's suggestions. It's from 15. All these numbers look alike to me. It's called Land. You've heard it before, but I think it's worth hearing again. Stay with us.
Go home with our problem for only one reason. The president raises the question, who owns the land? The homeless, our problem for only one reason. Our president raises the question, who owns the land? Who owns the land? Who owns the land? Who owns the land? Could it be 90 million dead Indians? Who owns the land? Could it be 6 million Jews? Who owns the land? Won't someone please tell me who owns the land? I am just a white man. Who owns the land? I live in the Americas. Who owns the land? How did I get here? This morning, I was awoken by a man with a handgun. He's got a book of rules that says I ain't got no right to sleep. This morning, I was awoken by a man with a handgun. He's got a book of rules that says I ain't got no right to be. Who owns the land? Who owns the land? Who owns the land? Could it be that there's a connection? Who owns the land? To my daily eviction. Who owns the land? And the extermination. Who owns the land? Of the Native American. Who owns the land? Won't someone please tell me who owns the land? 'Cause I am just a white man. Who owns the land? 'Cause I live in the Americas. Who owns the land? How did I get here? Owns its own self. Maybe it's the Native America. The homeless are a problem for only one reason. My president raises a question, who owns the land? The homeless are a problem for only one reason. Your presence raises the question, who owns the land? Ecocide, genocide, where is home? Ecocide, genocide, where is home? Ecocide, genocide, where is home? Ecocide, genocide, where is
That was Land by 15, a group I like, and I'm probably going to be playing more of. They've got a number of songs relating to folks outdoors and folks who just want to survive and are having a little trouble doing that. And, of course, in Santa Cruz, the issue has been for a lot of us things like rent control and the sleeping ban and police relations with the homeless that have not been too good. And how can that be improved? And one of the hopes for improving that has been the Green Party of Santa Cruz. On the line with me is Nick Whitehead, or I call him Nutcracker Nick, because I've known him for so long, and he sometimes cracks a few nuts.
And I'm a member of the Green Assembly of Santa Cruz County.
Mm-hmm. What is the Green Assembly?
The Green Assembly is the decision-making body of the ordinary membership,
uh-huh.
the most democratic part of the Green Party.
Uh-huh. And what I know that back in, February of last year, the Greens, I guess it was because of a state position against sleeping bans that would... It said that bans against sleeping statewide were impermissible, and there's a very kind of strong plank in the Green Party's state platform that supports the rights of homeless people. Didn't you also take a position, your party that is, locally as well as statewide, that you wouldn't endorse anybody who didn't call for immediate action to end the sleeping ban? Is that accurate?
I'm a bit worried about the reception. Are you hearing me?
I am hearing you. I'm kind of...
Are you getting a strong enough signal?
I believe so, yeah.
I'm up in the mountains, yeah.
Yeah, you're kind of far away, but you're on the phone line, so the phones come directly to us.
Yeah, it's true that the platform of the Green Party does state that every Green member ought to fight against repressive laws against the homeless and try to seek their repeal.
Mm-hmm.
And you and Becky have raised the matter of our new mayor, Fitzmaurice, not actively pursuing that role.
Now, he is a member of the Green Party, right?
He's a member of the Green Party in good standing at the moment.
Mm-hmm. Well, a lot of people have been kind of cynical because not only has Fitzmaurice taken a dive on this issue, pretty regularly for the last 2 years, although he did join briefly for a time in this Safe Sleeping Zones proposal that Sugar came up with in May until Catherine Byers jumped ship and Fitzmaurice jumped ship with her in June. And then in July, Fitzmaurice did this complete about-face, wouldn't even allow an initiative that many of us had hoped would go on the ballot, which would simply strike the sleeping ban. Fitzmaurice wouldn't allow any debate on it, and it was his own initiative. He had a bad initiative himself that he presented, but had he allowed debate...
Yeah, I think we've all been hoping that Fitzmaurice would act out of conscience and see the light and automatically do the right thing by opposing the continuation of the sleeping ban. But since that hasn't happened, I've proposed, for a broad number of reasons, that we have a working group. That's the way the Green Party operates, a working group on homelessness, and that we work on designing overall solutions to fulfill the needs that exist in the community.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly a part of that working group's goal, as I see it, since I'm the initiator, would be to put Fitzmaurice on the spot about his lack of commitment to ending the sleeping ban.
Well, I think that's a great idea. I only wish I'd been at the meeting yesterday. I think I knew it was happening, but as sort of a non-Green, I kind of haven't been coming to the meetings. But I think, for example, there is a wholly separate but kind of related area that the mayor has, and Mayor Sugar before him, have been really out of line, out of bounds on in terms of repressing democratic discussion. And often it has involved homeless activists like myself,
yeah,
or David Silva, James Ney, Becky Johnson, trying to raise issues at City Council. And we call it violations of the Brown Act, the Public Records mm-hmm. Act that lets the public have real access to the public process.
Mm-hmm.
Fitzmaurice's latest, it's gone beyond a Brown Act violation to be called what we call a slap suit, a strategic lawsuit against public participation.
Well, I would like to get together with SCAN
mm-hmm.
and the Green Party and co-sponsor some effective public forums on these issues that we all care about.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would even go, that's good, but I would even go further than that and encourage people to look at the merits of this slap suit. The mayor, of course, and people who've been listening to Free Radio know this, has moved through his administrative assistant, Anna Brooks, to have the people who are peacefully lobbying at City Hall, three of us, barred. We can't come within 50 yards of City Hall through an injunction, which he engineered. In order to answer it, we had to spend $200 each. We are still barred from... We can go to public meetings there, and we can go to other offices, but not the mayor's office, in order to conduct
official business. We can't stop and talk to homeless people in the city council complex. We are, in essence, barred from the public process at City Hall unless we're going to public meetings or looking at documents. So this seems to me to be something that any activist would be really concerned about, and that a green mayor, Fitzmaurice, would do this kind of thing, and that it would pass without a notice at the last meeting, for example, even though I wasn't there to bring it up. I guess I'm worried that this pursuit of power that has become, you know, oh, we got a green mayor, oh, we got a green mayor in Arcata, you know, that sort of thing becomes more important than the substance of the green positions. What's your feeling about that, Nick?
Well, the Green Party is founded on different principles to other parties in the way it conducts its business and tries to reach satisfactory results. And that is, we don't take votes that are just yes or no. When we're deciding something and a course of action and what we want the city to do, we take a longer time, and we have a process called consensus,
mm-hmm.
which means that anybody who disagrees, say we wanted to censure Fitzmaurice,
mm-hmm.
And maybe put some sanctions on him,
mm-hmm.
such as saying, telling him finally and absolutely, we will never support you again in a rerun.
Mm-hmm.
Just say we did that. We
or perhaps recall him.
Recall. We would have to answer all the concerns of those who disagreed with that, for instance, and I'm only using this as an example. We'd have to answer, you know, people would raise questions about the repercussions of being that didactic, if you like.
But I guess I'm worried about the repercussions of doing nothing. I mean, that is, in essence, what the Greens have done for 2 years.
What I'm trying to point out to you is the Green Party the Green process is not a cut and dried process. Everybody has to have their say.
No, I understand.
Before we make a big decision.
But isn't it significant, Nick, that this issue has not even been raised in a substantive way in the last 2 years throughout Fitzmaurice's reign? I mean, since...
By whom?
Well, by any Green Party member, even though he's a Green who...
No, David Silver has been running a subcommittee of the Green Party on homeless matters.
Right, no, I mean Fitzmaurice's role in this. I have not heard Fitzmaurice called to account by any public speaker saying, I'm a Green Party member and I'm ashamed of this man's behavior.
Yeah, privately, maybe some did privately, probably...
I'm talking about publicly, at the public mic. What does it mean to do it privately,
true.
You know?
That's true. The Green Party has not publicly reprimanded Fitzmaurice.
Or even members of the Green Party. I mean, you know, Jeff Shuey or yourself or even David Silva standing up and speaking publicly on this issue. I mean, people talk about the issues, and I'm glad that we got the Green Party supporting ending the sleeping ban.
Yeah,
but
if it
continues to support politicians who thwart it, you know.
We did not have a big standing in the county, the Green Party. It had impressive numbers of voters registered, but we didn't really have... It's only now because of the NADER campaign, and we've drawn in lots more voters who regularly come to our meetings. It's only now that we could claim to have any political clout that would have any impact. So I think this is the opportune time.
Well, I'd be pleased again to see this happen. I guess I keep wondering that, you know, even when you had a smaller group of people who, in essence, might
before anything that we had produced. It could have been sloughed off because politicians ignore people who can't damage them. I mean, that's just a fact.
Well,
who will withdraw their support?
I don't know. I think that every voice that weighed in for sleeping ban repeal in the spring of 2000 had a real impact and eventually put Sugar in a position where when we started our Waiting for Sugar coffee clutch back in May, he collapsed and decided to put it on the agenda. Collapse isn't the word. He saw reason, if you will, and put the issue of the safe sleeping zones on the agenda. David Silva's FAST, you know, helped with that. Our own, you know, Pie in the Pusser protest helped with that.
Right.
But I note not one person from the Green Party has stood up and said, as a Green, I feel ashamed and shocked that Mayor Fitzmaurice is supporting...
Well, I don't have an answer to that, except to say that maybe...
I'm not holding you responsible, but I'm saying I'm concerned about that.
You might also have to question your own effectiveness. If you came to the Green Party, and Becky came with you sometimes to the Green Party, and you were not able to get that response, you have to ask yourself, why was that?
Oh, so it's my fault that the Green Party is betraying its own principles here?
No, it's your fault. It's a matter of relative effectiveness.
Oh, come on.
For some reason...
I'm sorry.
For some reason, it didn't penetrate the skulls of...
You know, it's not a question of how you schmooze it. I mean, it's a question, it's pretty much a question of how the realities are. You either want to deal with those realities or you don't. And when I came to Green Party meetings recently, I saw you guys falling all over yourselves to run after Arnie Leff, who has been a complete disaster as head of the Citizens Police Review Board. Yet you endorsed him, you funded him, you helped him. I don't understand how you could do that. And I don't understand how you could allow Fitzmaurice.
Well, the Green Party is an amalgam of environmental interests, public health interests, and social justice.
Yes, but you're the head of SPAN.
Oh, wait,
Nick.
Now let me have my say.
Sure.
And Arnie Leff filled the bill on a majority of those interests. You're right, he didn't fill the bill satisfactorily on the police review, and I don't know anybody who's chaired the police review commission who would satisfy the Green viewpoint on that either.
Well, why didn't you block consensus on Arnie Leff? You're the man who for his headed, you know, SPAN, Stop Police Abuse Now. You know about Leff's...
I'm not the head of SPAN. SPAN is not an operating entity right now.
Well, let me put it this way. You are a person who co-founded SPAN, I refer people to you.
Yeah,
I
want to point out to the listeners the tactics that Mr. North, the host, is using towards me. I readily admit that I am one of the Greens who could have brought up homeless issues in a more forceful manner, particularly vis-a-vis the mayor,
mm-hmm.
the current mayor. But I want the listeners to note the tone and technique that Mr. North is using to, like, I feel he's trying to throw dirt at me, and he's trying to
cast it's not personal,
the Green
Nick.
Party. Politics is definitely compromise, and in the case of Dr. Leff, there were many excellent reasons to vote for him and support him, and as a matter of fact, I think he's going to play a very instrumental role in future watchdog efforts on government policy locally.
You know, Nick, I don't think you should take these criticisms personally, and I did warn you before this call that there would be some, you know,
yeah, but I don't
some strong discussion
productive.
Here.
I don't see how it's productive for the listeners to be going through all this ordeal when really I'm trying to do the right thing and get the working group going inside the Green Party.
And I commend you for that.
Right.
But what I do not commend anybody on the Green Party for, and that would include you, is a failure for the last 2 years to do this, and also one would ask...
Well, I'm not even prepared to talk about the last 2 years because the Green Party now is a much more powerful and refreshed party with larger numbers. We have a lot more confidence now. It might have been, it probably was a lack of confidence mm-hmm. before because we didn't have a lot of people showing up at our meetings. Now we do. Our meetings are always 25 to 30 people.
That's good.
And we have very large lists of people who joined, Democrats who joined the Green Party because of the NATO campaign.
And I'm glad of that, but let me just say this, that you have a city council meeting coming up on Tuesday, a special meeting at which there will be a discussion of appointees for the Citizens Police Review Board. Now, individuals from the Green Party, you don't have to even say they represent the Green Party, but say, I am a Green, and I believe this is the Green Party platform, and I would like, in other words, raising the issue publicly before these city council members can be done this Tuesday at 3 o'clock, it can be done next...
Are they going to recommend... potential appointees?
Yes, they are. They're, let's put it this way. You have a chance to speak about appointees to different commissions, and that would include the Citizens Police Rah-Rah Board, as I call it.
But if they've already decided who they want to appoint...
Well, theoretically, they haven't. That's the point. I mean, theoretically, they're supposed to listen to the public on this issue.
So they could still reconsider.
They could still reconsider, but...
appoint a stronger person.
Right.
A more controversial
unlikely,
person.
But, you know, yes, yeah. They could. And more important, the public could hear a Green Party person, not necessarily a spokesperson, but an individual who cares about these principles, as I know you do, Nick. I am not
well,
in any
okay.
way trying
I,
to throw
I was
dirt
not aware
at you.
That this is already coming up on Tuesday, so I will try to be there.
Yeah, that's happening.
What time is it?
It starts at 3 o'clock, and that's when the commission appointments are.
Oh. Is it a foregone conclusion?
No. The public is allowed to speak on the issue of who they think should be appointed. And that's a part of the public comment process, though in the past...
And they have to be city residents.
They do have to be city residents.
Right.
Right. I mean, you know, you have... I'm going to be talking later on the show about the Citizens Police Review Board's abominable record and Arnie Leff's abominable record. And I mean, I was using you as an example, Nick, and it may have sounded personal. It's not intended to be personal. But I do hold, you know, the Green... You have to hold somebody responsible for, you know, for a candidate that split the vote Kennedy and Eugenthal, you know...
Absolutely, we should be responsible for our candidate, especially now that he's the mayor.
Right, I mean...
He's had 2 years, I think, of really lax
No oversight, no accountability.
Yeah, we haven't had any interventional oversight on him.
Right. I know you as...
I hope he doesn't respond well to that either.
Oh, I'm... Well, I don't think he'll respond well to your trying to hold him accountable either, but I think that the community may respond better, and that's what
right.
counts to me.
Yeah, now, that point, I hear you on that.
Right.
I hear you. You may well be speaking for the community, especially the community of the oppressed.
Right. Well, I don't claim to do that, but I would say that insofar as you articulate green principles and point out that Mayor Fitzmaurice is not following those principles on the sleeping ban, on the Dolphin Lee, where the Dolphin tenants, I understand, have been thinned out by half in spite of the scan resolution urging that they be, guaranteed return to their housing before they get kicked out and before their houses get bulldozed from under them.
Right, I've been following that. Sure.
Failure to act on rent control, failure to act on meaningful police review, all kinds of things he's failed to act on, and of course the horrible public process or lack of public process at City Council.
Okay, let's hope, and this is mm-hmm. almost like a prayer, really,
mm-hmm.
that Fitzmaurice himself was in the same position as the Green Party generally, waiting to have the feeling of a bigger mandate for bolder things that he might want to do in his conscience. Fitzmaurice might very well feel that now, the way the council is set up, there's a much more progressive momentum, and he really can get some of those things done.
You know, I talked to an activist 3 days ago who put a lot of energy into the election campaign. I'm not going to speak his name on the air till he gives me permission to do so, but he's one of these guys in the middle who always, who tries to be, the fellow who mediates and who kind of, I regard him as sort of caving in on numerous issues,
yeah.
But nonetheless, he, like yourself, he has a good heart. I mean, I think Fitzmaurice has a good heart. I mean, nobody's challenging the color of people's blood. We're looking at the actions people are engaged in. Fitzmaurice has a majority to end the sleeping ban. Fitzmaurice has a majority to consider rent control. Fitzmaurice has all these majorities, and he isn't doing shit.
He does.
I mean, he has Ed Porter, and he has two other people. That's four. And he even has a majority to...
Well, yeah,
to,
I agree.
You know?
I think it looks good when you...
It doesn't look good because he's not going to do anything. That's the problem. When we talk to him repeatedly, he continued to say, I intend to do nothing,
Mayors always have to be shaped by community pressures. And it's true, we have never pressured Fitzmaurice. We don't actually know how he would respond to the pressure of us trying to shape him in a particular direction and leadership. We really don't know yet.
Well,
we're very soon going to find out.
I appreciate that, and I mean, let me put it this way: the more you can put that pressure forward in whatever you think is the appropriate form, I commend you for. I want to let you know that the homeless working group is meeting today. In case you want to look in on that, and I can, if anybody who's interested in coming to that meeting, give a call to 423 Huff.
Uh-huh.
It'll be at 6 o'clock this evening, and there will be some important people at it, I believe, as well as the fine activists who you know and love.
I'm going to take off because we're up in Ben Lomond, and it takes a while to get to town, and we're going to take my girlfriend's son to college. So I got to sign off right now.
Hey, listen, thank you, Nick. And for those who are interested, how can they get in touch with the Green Party?
They can call me at my home number, 475-2012. I'll repeat that, Nicholas, at 475-2012.
And we've been talking to Nicholas Whitehead of the Green Party, a man who's been fighting for the rights of poor people for at least a decade and a half, to my knowledge, and perhaps longer.
Yep.
Thank you, Nick.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And you are tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. I'm your host, Robert Norse, and phone lines are open. Was I too hard on Nick? Well, give me a call and let me hear from you. Some people would say I wasn't hard enough. Here's an incoming call.
Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hi, Robert. This is Adrian. I listen to your show. I've been listening a lot because I've been reading at home. Anyway, I think it's really great that... Nicholas was his name, would go on your show. It shows a tremendous amount of bravery when compared to anyone else in our...
Well, you're on the show.
What?
You're on the show.
Yeah, but I don't have any position of... Nobody knows who I am.
we'll find out.
Yeah, you'll find out.
Uh-huh.
So I'm sure others have tried that too. But anyway, I think that it's great that he was on the show and that you both spoke, and I'm really surprised that there isn't more oversight over so-called Greens, like Fitzmaurice, because I re-registered Green quite a while ago, and I have been voting for Greens, and I voted for all of those guys who on the city council because they're Greens, and I figure, well, at least they're not going to be conservative, you know, asshole pro-business downtown.
Oh.
You know? Well, that's the truth of it. Because
yeah, I understand.
Rent-a-cop information people have actually told me to keep it moving.
Hosts?
Yeah, the hosts.
Oh, boy.
And I was born here, God damn it.
Keep it moving.
Yeah, keep
it moving. Tell me when this happened.
Oh, this was a few years ago when they first came around.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I'm just walking around and I am frequently overly thoughtful. I was thinking, should I go this way or should I go that way? And I wasn't quite sure which way that taco place was that I wanted to go. So they said, hey, keep it moving. And I'm like, you know,
that is really hard.
Isn't that lame?
That is incredible. I mean, I've heard of hosts harassing people for sitting, but for not walking quickly enough?
I wasn't going one way or the other.
Well, you've got to keep... And did you have enough money on you? Did they check your purse?
You know, that was the thing, is that I was clean. It was so... I was all the gross things that you're supposed to be. I was clean. My clothes were perfect. I had a little cash in my pocket. I was ready to buy something down there. And he's all, keep it moving. And I'm like, what do you get? You get $7 an hour to be a jerk off. But regardless.
Hey, hey, well said. I hope you told him that, but you probably
didn't.
No,
I didn't.
Too polite, I suppose.
I was trying to be mainstream. Anyway.
I know the feeling.
I think it's great that this guy came on to talk, and I'm really surprised that any Green doesn't have some kind of, there's no, what do you call it? Oh, God, I'm losing my words.
Accountability.
There's no accountability. There's also no consequence.
Right.
For Fitzmaurice.
Right.
And this game playing the bullshit with his secretary. You know, I'm saying things that aren't very polite, but it's true that this Honor Brooks thing, this is absurd.
Right. You're talking, of course, about the restraining order against me and two others because of complaints by Anna Brooks that we are harassing her by sitting in the city council offices with signs and literature.
Right. That's right. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how loud you guys are, but I just think that it looks like an orchestrated attempt to, you know, just do the bureaucratic bullshit, which we don't expect from Greens. You know what I mean? It's like, hey, wait a minute, you are our Hail Mary pass. We're trying to change our community by voting for you.
Yeah, this, you know, the sad truth is, you know, Mike Feinstein of Santa Monica is a Green, and he did something very similar to what Fitzmaurice did. He voted for a sitting ban down in Santa Monica back in 1995, I believe it was. We denounced him for it in an article, and he raged at us because, you know, we were attacking the sacred Greens. You know, I mean, I was really impressed to read the Green Party platform on homelessness. I've actually read it on the air. It's a great platform. I mean, David Silva's done really strong work locally trying to get and succeeded in getting the Green Party to really closely require the candidates they endorsed to support ending the sleeping ban. But the candidate they endorsed, Ed Porter, has done nothing to end the sleeping ban. When we ask him to do something about it, he won't bring it up. He won't bring up additional shelter.
Mm-hmm.
He is selling out. That's the only thing to say. And he won't answer phone calls. I mean, we are in a position where these politicians are just not accountable.
Well, I have some sympathy towards the Greens in that apparently they didn't have the organizational mechanisms to oversight, you know, to watch and say, oh, well, this person isn't functioning as a Green, actually. But I hope that will come into place very, very soon.
Well, you're a patient woman. I mean, you're right. I mean, you know, Nick is talking about how, well, there aren't enough people, you know, and we didn't have a big enough group and all that sort of thing. And that's certainly, you know, I mean, that's an argument. But it doesn't take a lot of people. Three or four of us as activists regularly go to city council and inform the community about what's going on until, of course, they barred us from the last city council meeting. But now we'll be able to say something
about that.
Yeah.
That a lot of people may look at you as a shit stir and all this, but I am really glad that you guys are around because I don't have, you know, the energy to keep doing that sort of thing that you're doing, and I hope that the message gets out there that you have, in my opinion, as much support towards you guys as I would towards, say, the Greens. That we need people who say what's going on at ground zero, you know,
right,
for the homeless people. We need that.
Well, it should be said that neither I, Bernard, nor Becky, the three people who are enjoined and are still enjoined from being 50 yards from City Hall, except on official business, are not homeless, you know, and we definitely have our own point of view, and we were, you know, simply trying to bring the issue of the sleeping ban to the public attention and also to the city council's attention, because they are, I mean, this winter there has been even less attention paid to this issue than ever before, even though you have a majority. Mm-hmm. You have at least five people, at least four, certainly, but probably five, maybe six, who would vote for an end to the sleeping ban if somebody brought it up, because they'd be embarrassed not to.
Right.
You know,
well,
but nobody will put it on the agenda, you know.
You guys have, well, this is the thing of, oh, God, I forgot the word I was going to use, but for the comfortable middle class, you know, it's not in their face. They don't have to live that way. And they actually, I'm a very imaginative person. I can imagine what it's like to be treated like crap because, say, if I was black or if I was gay. But I've been homeless, and these guys have never been homeless. And for some people, unfortunately, they really have to experience the pain of, you know, it's cold and windy and rainy. You have very little cash on you, and you have to think every day, where am I going to get a shower, where am I going to sleep? And they don't. So there's no sort of emotional consequence for them not to end the sleeping ban.
Right. And, you know, I think, though, that, and I appreciate your, you know, being supportive of us, those of us who are, we can't go to City Hall now, so we can't do the continued lobbying that we'd like to do. Mm-hmm. Some have suggested we continue it by, you know, by other people going in our stead, and it's perfectly legal, for example, for you to walk into the City Council offices, sit down with a sign and some literature, read a book, and then leave a note for the mayor saying, I'd like to talk to you about ending the sleeping ban. But, you know, it's really, it also, there's been an intimidating effect by this latest injunction. You probably are going to think twice before you do that.
I'm already working on a big project that I've been working on, actually.
What? Really?
Is it not about homelessness?
Uh-huh.
It's actually about researching the Persian Gulf War. I made up my own little project.
Interesting.
Of research, so I probably wouldn't. But it's not that I'm not interested in that kind of thing. It's just that I'm already committed to
doing. And at least you're interested enough to give a call into the show and to give us your views.
Oh, yeah. I cast a wide net of interest.
Well, you know, I encourage you, when you hang up or anybody else who's listening, to just make one phone call to City Council Hotline, which is 420-5017.
Mm-hmm.
420-5017.
420-5017.
And then just leave a message that you would like the city council to immediately move to end the sleeping and blanket bans, and they would also ask them to dissolve this injunction and to start returning calls from members of the public on this issue.
Mm-hmm.
Because, see, they're not doing any of that.
And that's keep a log, phone log.
And
talk about that.
Exactly. Tote up the number of calls.
Yeah. I've been treated like crap by enough, you know, I mean, almost, you could say pathologically treated like crap by enough bureaucrats in this town that I know that this kind of thing can happen.
Yeah. And I'm afraid that you get this sort of inner circle of exclusion.
That's
where,
right.
You know, the SCAN organization, we've talked about this, Santa Cruz Action Network, which endorsed and elected at least two of the new candidates and has a majority on the city council.
Mm-hmm.
They endorsed ending the sleeping ban, but not one of their spokespeople has shown up with any kind, in any recent time to state that. They've completely surrendered on the Dolphin Lee issue, which is the issue of the tenants in the beach flats.
Mm-hmm.
They are not speaking out on the issue of lack of democracy at City Council, where we see people, not just me, but others, being denied basic civil rights there.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something that they do that because maybe like Nick, they're trying to find an appropriate way to kind of bring it forward with enough community support so that it has a realistic political chance of change. But the danger of all those calculations is, unless you speak your mind and your heart and you wait for the opportune political moment, it just, sometimes it never comes, and you find that you yourself change, and you become less likely to raise the issue, whereas if you had raised the issue, you might have gotten more support, even if you didn't think you had it to start with.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
I think that people have to show, you know, backbone and not be too afraid to offend, this kind of thing.
Right.
On the other hand, you need to maybe be more gentle because, you know, it's easy for them to point to you and say, ah, look at him, you know. And I also called so that people realize that there's support for you. There's a lot of support for you.
Well, you know, I've really never asked people to support me. I've asked people to support the position
position.
End the sleeping ban. You can badmouth me all you want, I would say to people. You could think that, you know, that I'm too harsh in the way I proceed, but I get tired of waiting around for 2 years for the Green Party to take a position. It knew after 3 months what Fitzmaurice was up to. It was really quite clear. Mm. And it didn't take a large lobbying effort. If one Green Party person had walked up to that mic at any one of the 52 council meetings that have happened since then, I would have been able to say, well, the Green Party at least weighed in on this issue, but they did not. And that is why I am so cranky, if you will.
I'm not saying that about this interaction today or even about the green issue. I'm just saying maybe, I don't know, you could critique yourself in a way where it doesn't make it so easy for them to attack you.
But I'm perfect, you know that.
Okay, all right. But you are patient because I know something like 10 years ago, I remember you invited me to come to your meeting for the homeless working group.
And now you finally showed up on the phone. Excellent.
No, I've called many times.
Oh, you have? Okay.
I have.
I guess I'm losing it over the year. I think I do remember your name, actually.
I'm very quiet about who I am.
Okay.
All righty. Well, I'll let you go.
Hey, and let me know if you get any response from City Council when you call.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, someone's listening to the show. This is encouraging. We got another call coming in. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz. Phone lines are 427-3772 once this caller is answered.
Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hi, Robert. Bernard.
Hey, Bernard.
I just wanted to weigh in, you know, on how you handled Nick. Well, I think, you know, you were right on two accounts. You know, one, you know, you weren't hard enough on him. Also, though, you know, it was the opposite, too. You know, you were too hard on him. And this is the way I see it, is you didn't give him enough space to fully answer your question. You cut him off several times, you know, and what you should have given him the opportunity to fully develop his, you know, his response, you know. And second of all, on the other side of the coin is, you know, when he was going, you know, when he was going into the area, you know, that he, you know, the Greens would have not been effective. Mm-hmm. I think that that's a rationalization. Mm-hmm. You know, regardless of how effective or non-effective they're going to be, they are supposed to be a principled party, and you could have nailed him on that.
Well, you are. I'm glad you're bringing it up, Bernard.
You know, well, he may not be listening.
Well, the listeners are listening, and that's, I think, as important.
You know, I think you could have, really slammed the gun on him in that area of it. Anyway, that's all I wanted to say.
Hey.
And I just hope that also that woman that just called me before me, you know, I think if you would just have your critiques, you know, just a little slightly less personal, I think you could win your position out there much further in the community. Mm-hmm. But that's up to you.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay, bye-bye.
Hey, thank you, Bernard.
Well, thank you for your calls, and the lines are open, 427-3772. I don't really think I do get personal. In fact, I try to ease the pain a lot by specifying I don't think that I really admire, for example, Nick Whitehead a great deal. It's just the Green Party that I can't stand in terms of what it's not been doing.
Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Yeah, I'm probably going to be lynched when I say I am, but I'm a registered Republican, but I still think it's bullshit that you guys are dealing with.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, tell us more, Mr. Republican.
Well, I mean, I'm only technically a really registered Republican, but I don't know, I kind of checked out there for the last couple of minutes, but I was listening more specifically with the deal you're getting with the, you know, I guess silent protest, so to speak, in the
injunction.
Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, there is that whole freedom of assembly and freedom of speech, you know, that little tiny thing of the First Amendment. You know?
A little matter of the Constitution.
Right.
Yeah, right. Well, I mean, it's interesting. I was saying that what Mayor Fitzmaurice is really a Republican masquerading as a Green, and I don't say that. I say that, I guess, to hold him up to a certain amount of ridicule before the community, because Although in some cases, I've got friends who are Republicans and people who support homeless rights who are Republicans. It doesn't matter what your party affiliation
sure.
is. You know, the right to sleep.
Unfortunately, there's a lot of very vocal Republicans that are complete assholes.
That's true. No question. But unfortunately, there are a lot of vocal progressives on the city council who, you know, I would say fit the same classification insofar as they don't favor basic civil rights for people and they prefer to ignore issues that they've made commitments on. I mean, it's something that I will... Hopefully all of us can change, and I appreciate your calling. Any other thoughts? Have you been listening for a while today? Or?
Well, I checked out probably for the last... I've been kind of working on my computer the last few moments, so I didn't hear all of the... heard your conversation with Adrian there a little while ago. And I myself have had the same... had interesting treatment. Not necessarily so much... I have a very noticeable disability, so that in itself kind of keeps a lot of the, you know, a lot of the cops from kind of or downtown security, so to speak, as it were,
keeps them at bay.
Right, but there was one time where I had an incident where I had a CD case stolen downtown, and something that was really odd when I was going ahead and I was filling out the report with the cops. They wanted my social security number, and I don't know that. That's a little odd. I don't know.
I don't like giving my social security number.
No.
I mean, I usually avoid it, although they can, you know, they used to be that you were not allowed to ask you for that. Now they changed that, I think, 5 or 10 or maybe 20 or 30 years ago. But whenever I can avoid it, I avoid it. I mean,
well, correct me if I'm wrong. I think it says on the card, you know, it's not to be used for identification.
Exactly. They love to use it, of course, to get you in their database, and that's why they stop a lot of young people downtown without there being any real criminal basis, is in order to fill up their database with stuff so that if there is some crime later on that they've got to jump on the game. But, you know, that's the police state, where the police, everyone's a suspect, police have the right to make the rules, you don't have to, probable cause doesn't enter into it. And the politicians, I think, play into this when they use a person like Anna Brooks, who's, you know, is a, you know, an ordinary worker there, to get an injunction against folks who are essentially engaging in First Amendment activity. Not just essentially, completely engaging in First Amendment activity, but First Amendment activity that the city council and the mayor don't like. They don't want to be reminded that they're not meeting their commitments on this crazy go-to-sleep, go-to-jail law.
And what's this rationale that she's not able to concentrate on her work?
She has made numerous accusations.
I mean, if she's not able to concentrate on her work, maybe they need to get a new secretary.
Well, yeah, or maybe they need to design the office differently so she isn't sitting next to people all the time that she doesn't like. I mean, it could be that. I feel that Anna is a relatively high-strung person. I mean, I've been able to work with her over the years, but we've had our points of conflict in the past. I mean, she's a kind of a person that likes everything just so in the office area, you know, sometimes I've used this phrase in my declaration, sounds like she's talking to someone with a six-year-old with a hearing defect. Sometimes you get the feeling
that way. Yeah, no, I actually had that. I'm personally blind myself, and I have people think I'm deaf, and they have to shout.
Right. Well, that I mean, you know,
I mean, but that I
there might be more justification for in a person's mind for that than this. I mean, it's the officious tone, and people in offices sometimes get officious. They have to deal with lots of people every day, so they're not always, you know, in the nicest frame of mind. So they try to take a more impersonal perspective, and I can appreciate that. But in this situation, Tim Fitzmaurice, the mayor, was repeatedly coming out and telling to people, "You must leave this office." He was using those words, and he was talking to people who are in the foyer, the public foyer that's open all day, that is available if you have business in the office. And we did. We were waiting to see council members. We were waiting to talk to them. We were waiting to leave messages for them, and we were there on legitimate business. And if we weren't, he could have called the police and had us removed for trespass.
But he didn't, because he knew he didn't have any ground to stand on.
Exactly. Instead, he concocted this case that we now have to pay through the nose for it, even to answer. It's a bizarre thing, because it's like he accuses us of stalking her. You know, it's like we're somehow interested in Anna Brooks and not in the city council.
So he's imposed some sort of fine on you guys? Or?
Well, it's not so much a fine. Well, we had to pay $200 apiece or get a waiver, which only one of us could do, for answering her complaint. In other words, we'd either have to... In order to have the privilege of saying not guilty to this, we had to pay $200 each, and we still haven't had our day in court. What happened was the judge on, I guess it was last Wednesday, he ruled that he wanted to hear first the arguments from our attorneys in a month, because he wanted to give the other side a chance to respond, the Anna Brooks and the city. Our attorney is claiming that this is a slap suit, a strategic lawsuit against public participation, that is to say, a government lawsuit masquerading as a harassment suit that is really trying to get rid of us as protesters. And if that's the case, then immediately it's supposed to be struck down and we're supposed to be awarded costs. So he's going to hear that first on January 31st at 8:30 in Department 7 for anybody who's interested. And that, I'll be announcing that again on this show.
What day of the week is that?
That'll be probably, you know, it may be a Wednesday, but I'm not sure. I just know it's the 31st. And it's at 8:30 in Department 7. We're going to have to wait until after that to even get an answer to this injunction. The injunction is still in place, though it's been limited. We still can't go within 50 yards of City Hall unless we're there on going to a public meeting or going to an office other than the mayor's office looking for records. We can't go to the mayor's office for any purpose. We can't talk to homeless people in the entire block of the city council complex. We can't sit there with a sign. We can't sit and watch a sunset. We're barred. I mean,
you can't even go there just to enjoy the area?
That's correct. We can't be there at all. And if we are, we're guilty of a misdemeanor and possibly of a felony. It's not clear from the injunction. This is pretty serious stuff.
Yeah.
So that's what's happening with that. And I encourage people to give a call to 420-5017, which is the City Council's 24-hour message line, and say, look, can you please explain to me why this is being done to people? And, you know, and also, more important, get back to the real issue, which is not us. I mean, they can tell us to leave. That's fine. It's not fine, of course. But the real issue is like the 1,500-plus homeless people outside each night that have $54 fines waiting for them if they fall asleep. We're not talking about falling asleep on somebody's front yard where there's a trespass law, or falling asleep sprawled across the sidewalk where there's a blocking the sidewalk law. We're talking about anywhere in Santa Cruz, outside or in a vehicle, with some very few exceptions that don't cover many people.